Well, hello and welcome to our teleseminar. And, of course, this is Ali Alberigo, and I'm honored and I'm most excited about being with you here today. As you know, I continually do teleseminar after teleseminar on topics that consist of information about your school, the many systems involved in running it, as well as the mindset on how to get things done, what you need to do as a school owner. You may ask why I say I'm so excited about this teleseminar. The simple answer is it falls into the category that's in line with my martial art teachings. As many of you know, I'm a traditional teacher of the art of ninjutsu, nimpo, and jujutsu. Of course, there are many other influences which encompass what I teach in my school, such as Aikido, Kali Arnis, Shotokan Karate, Kyokushinkai, and my 41 years of martial art experience. While I teach the traditional arts of jujitsu and nimpo as my core curriculum in my school, I now consider my art to be called 21st century ninjutsu. Now, people have asked me how I can get away with calling my art 21st century anything when the philosophies are rooted in thousands of years of tradition. My easiest explanation is that all of my teachings stem from not only my martial art and physical backgrounds and the philosophies of my teachers, but I've received lessons from gurus such as Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, Brian Tracy, Rob Kiyosaki, Donald Trump, etc., etc. Many of these people have been my business mentors as well as life coaches, whether they know it or not. This seminar is labeled as Defeating Self-Limiting Beliefs. You may be rolling your eyes at this point and saying you're a martial artist and you push forward, you're a goal setter. Obviously, this must be true or you wouldn't be on this call right now doing what you're doing. But even though this may be true, we are all human and we get caught up in our own innate nature. This nature goes back to the evolution of man. We as humans are hunters, gatherers, nurturers. We work real hard to reach the top of the mountain, climb to the peak, and then we take a break to smell the roses. Quite often, many people put effort forward without realizing their dreams or goals, and then they stop. If you don't think this is true, then look at your student population as a perfect example. How many people join with all good intentions? They love what you teach. They don't miss a single class. They can't get enough of what you do. And then we as instructors get excited thinking that we found the student of our dreams, the one who gets it, only to find out that this individual, they lose motivation and quit in the near future. My goal for you in this teleseminar is to dig a bit deeper than business systems alone, getting you as a business owner to ask yourself some real important questions. My goal is for you to do a bit of self-discovery, soul-searching, so to speak. For those of you that are listening live, you may think this is perfectly timely, that we're actually looking at goal setting or success strategies right before the new year. But for those of you who are listening at a later date, possibly on an archived phone call, all's not lost. You can start this process immediately and pick it up from whenever you listen to this call. Hopefully for those of you today, we'll do it starting today. As martial artists, we are simply a different breed of people. We have gone through trials and tribulations, blood, sweat, and tears, all to get where we are now. And for everyone out there, I applaud your efforts. The one thing usually missing in many people is consistency. We live our lives like flares at a roadside accident. We burn brightly for an hour, and then we die out. Then we recharge or become docile for a few hours. We burn strong, and then we rest twice as long. What is it about human nature that allows us to do this? Rather than going into some psychobabble, because I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, I want to clearly explain in my philosophy. The answer is this. We don't have the training. This is where this teleseminar gets real good, and here are three components to success. And I want everybody to take out a pen and paper and write it down. Number one, knowledge. Number two, time management. Number three, developing a high threshold. You may say to yourself that you've heard it all before, and I'm sure you have. The simple question I have for you, even though you heard it all before, is are you truly listening? Now let me repeat myself for effect and for clarification. Even though you've heard it, doesn't mean you are listening. These are two distinct things that I'd like to talk about. Let's take a bit about my first subject, knowledge. Knowledge as defined in a dictionary is, number one, an acquaintance with facts, truth, or principles, as from study or investigation. Number two, another description is familiarity, or basically as with a particular subject or a branch of learning, a knowledge of, let's say, accounting for a necessary job. The third description is acquaintance, or familiarity gained by insight or sight, or experience or reference. For example, a knowledge of human nature, the study of human nature. When speaking of knowledge, you may immediately think, I need to learn about this system or that program or teach in this way or whatever, when in reality what I want to first talk about is the reasons knowledge or the reasons why knowledge is so important. Now, before you shut me off, because this may seem like junior high school stuff, just give me a second here. When running a martial arts school, or in another example, being a parent, what we believe to be the norm may not be the norm at all. It may not be what it seems. We are not parents because we've been interviewed for a job and hired based on our competency and ability. We're parents due to the fact that the grand spirit or God or higher being gave us the strong desire to procreate. At times, being a parent is planned and well thought out. Even parents read books to prepare on what they're going to come up against during that whole entire cycle of being a parent. But no one quite interviews us and reviews us year after year to see if we're educated, qualified, and we can continue to be good parents. Why else do you think, and of course I'm being a little sarcastic, but there's the truth to this, is why else do you think there's so many screwed up people in the world? So why would running a martial arts school be any different than being a parent? When most of us became instructors and started teaching, being as unprepared as we possibly could for running a business. This is just food for thought. What is it about knowledge, you may ask yourself, that you need to know? What do you need to know? Simply put, first you need to know the function that you, as the owner or chief instructor, are responsible for. We have to have a clear understanding of our role and what we are and who we want to become. You know that old saying, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, what does a successful school owner do? Who do they talk to? What tasks do they perform? What physical background do they need? What abilities should they possess? What business education should they have? Now, this leads into priorities, and we also have to ask, what are business owners capable of prioritizing, which leads into the next topic, which is topic number two, not knowledge. The second one, time management. I've found that time management is as much as a spiritual tool as it is a business tool. When I say a spiritual tool, what I mean by that is with proper time management, you'll relieve yourself of stress. You'll be able to take more time for yourself, whether it be meditation or family time or just being able to dedicate more time to your cause, charity, whatever, or your business. Without proper time management and goal-setting skills, you'll miss out on many opportunities and fall behind. I've found the one common problem with either my next level site or my one-on-one elite coaching, which we're going to, by the way, make available to everybody out there through Member Solutions starting in January. I found that people are simply too busy to be successful. And you could quote me on that. This is a quote by Ali Alberigo. Ali says people are too busy to be successful. I'm going to use one of my staff members as an example. I won't mention names because he or she would be offended, but I doubt very much they'll be listening anyway. Can you imagine their boss is the motivational speaker and they're not on this call listening? Well, anyway, when they began running a school for me, they were out every day handing out flyers, doing special promotions. They were at every fair, at every school visit personally. We built his school up, or their school up, from 0 to 200 students in no time, and it was growing. We eventually bought another building, a 5,000-square-foot facility, and we grew the school to about a height of 330 to 350 students. Eventually, this instructor became the head instructor and successful. He was bringing in about $2,000 a month in commissions each month and taking home about $5,000 per month gross. And in my opinion, he was doing pretty well. He was grossing about $30,000 to $35,000 per month at the school, and we were all happy. Somewhere along the line, he did less flyers, asking his staff and people to do them for him, adding on payroll, of course. He did less talks in the schools, asking his staff to do it for him. They were less trained and less qualified, of course, adding on payroll. He added on more instructors to help him so that he can continue to do more of the tasks of growing the school, and then eventually started to get less and less results and focused on less important things. In turn, they are still filling their day with busy work, and the school has dropped considerably in income and student count. You may ask what went wrong. Well, this individual started thinking like a self-employed person. He forgot that the only way the school continues to grow and to stay prosperous and continually be on the upswing is if you're always on your game. There's no room to slack off. There's no room for space. You either work smart and hard or you just work hard. And notice I said work smart first. You must always work hard, there's no doubt, but you have to work smart and then hard. For example, a 50-hour work week is just to get by. Anything above is just to barely succeed. We need to work extra hard. I talk about this analogy in the past seminars, and imagine this. If you can find just 5 hours more of work week, five more hours in the week to work quality work, then if you add that 5 hours times 50 weeks, because let's say you take 2 weeks vacation, that's 250 hours more per year. Imagine you put 5 hours into marketing your business per week. That's 250 hours a year more of marketing. Divide that by a 50-hour work week. Then, you know, that's five solid weeks of marketing that you're doing. Or in a normal work week, let's pretend that you only work a 40-hour work week. You know, that's 6 weeks of work. Imagine the magnitude. Imagine how much better off you would be if you did this and did it correctly. So time management is essential. Again, what went wrong with this staff member? He lost his drive, and it's just like the whole saga of the Rocky movies with Sylvester Stallone. In Rocky I, he was hungry, and even though he was put in the fight as a fall guy, he was not expected to win. The problem is no one ever told Rocky that he went into the fight and that he, you know, he wasn't supposed to win. He looked at it as that he had one shot to make it work. He did whatever it took, just like I did in the early days of building my school, and my staff member did when he first came on board. He shot, and Rocky shot, and I shot for the stars. The results were amazing. Now, remember in Rocky II, he was put back up against Apollo Creed, although he didn't win the fight. He was still fighting like a madman. He wanted it more than ever. He had a taste for it, and he wasn't stopping until he was on top. Then, classically and ingeniously written, Sylvester Stallone wrote Rocky in Rocky III, and Rocky became complacent. He fought many fights, winning easily, and started to believe in all the hype. He wasn't aware that many of his opponents were handpicked and meant to be beaten easily. He got soft, and he stepped in, and then the character of Clubber Lang, which you guys could equate Clubber Lang to maybe being lazy or losing your drive, and Clubber Lang, of course, played perfectly by Mr. T, Rocky was beaten, and really what he needed was to stay on top. He needed to continually educate himself, train harder, and do the best that he could ever do to stay on top. Remember, even in the martial art business, the newest school owners are going to come in and try to chip away at your marketplace. You need to be the best and not get comfortable. It's all about going the extra mile. So a quick recap, real quickly. Just putting in 5 extra hours per week over the course of a year can turn into hundreds of hours that you never had before. If you put that into marketing, imagine the impact. You need to continually stay on top of your game, education-wise. And so far, the two main things I talked about is knowledge and time management. Now, let's quickly go back to knowledge, and I want to give you another quick example. I started doing elite consulting with a soon-to-be-retired police officer. When he was recommended to me, he was gung-ho on opening a brand-new school. He was committed to take most of his retirement savings and open up this school. He had taught martial arts part-time many years ago and really hadn't been in the business for years. When we first started working together, I was okay with helping him negotiate leases on his proposed locations, helping him on the layout of the facility. All the things I had made mistakes over the years in my past, I was able to help him with. I was able to negotiate with him from the landlord of the building a few months rent-free, a lower security deposit. I told him not to sign the lease personally to protect his savings in case all things went south. I instructed him on leasing of office equipment and mats rather than purchasing them outright. I helped him, quite frankly, eliminate all the mistakes a new school owner would make. In turn, if the deal went through, he would save tens of thousands of dollars for a small investment with me on one-on-one consulting. I later talked to him about opening the school and doing private lessons first before he opened up a physical location to build up his clientele. He did listen to me, and thank goodness, because it took him about a year before he was able to build up a student base. Imagine a year of paying rent and paying electricity and phone. He would have lost all that money. He would have ran through his entire retirement. Now, he really saved thousands of dollars in the long run, and that's why I say knowledge is key, and it's not the technical knowledge of how to do this or that, but it's in the innate business knowledge that is taught in the school of hard knocks through experience. Speaking of experience, there are many consultants in the industry today who are charismatic and very smart, yet They have never had a successful school or not had a school long enough to ride out the waves of ups and downs. I believe that if you're going to be a consultant, you have to, or have a mentor, that person has to know what it would be like, you know, when times are good, when times are bad, that they have to be a seasoned professional rather than a professor. Think about it. There are many college professors that teach economics and business, yet they have $0 in their checking account. I have an insurance and stockbroker who always continually recommends me stuff all the time, but I don't see him swimming in money. If he had all this knowledge, wouldn't he be retired by now? That's my question. So moving right along, what is a self-limiting belief? This question is actually the third of my three key attributes to success, which leads into number three, a high threshold. Again, referring back to my old dictionary, which of course is dictionary.com online, the first description of a threshold is the sill of a doorway, which is not a good example at all, right? Number two, the entrance to a house or a building. Now, this could be interesting if we look at this in a Zen-like way, but let's pass on that because, you know, the entrance to something. But three, any place or point of entering or beginning, the threshold of a new career. This is quite significant if you think about it. Four, the point at which a stimulus is sufficient intensity to begin to produce an effect, the threshold of consciousness, a low threshold of pain. The origin of this word is interesting because thresh in its ancient form means to trample or tread on. So in order to break through our threshold, we have to trample out our fears. So threshold is really your measurement of whether you are going to be a success or a failure. I'm going to give you another example. A very famous person, a friend of mine who's a celebrity that I know, once said, if you choose to be famous, you must have thick skin because people are always going to try to tear you down. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, what they say, and I realize this all the time myself because people are always taking pot shots at me saying that as a martial artist, I have a McDojo, especially in my art of ninjutsu and jujitsu. I have all these charlatans out there saying that if I'm a success, I must have sold out. They don't want to believe in their mind that just because they're not doing well, that it can't be their self-limiting beliefs. It must be that I have sold out somewhere. I've given in to sold my soul, you know, let's say. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's true, but people are going to always take pot shots. And anyway, I find this incredibly interesting, but then again, remember, it's human nature. It could be jealousy, but if you're easily discouraged, then being an extreme success or being an extreme successful business owner is not for you. That's why threshold is so important. If I could tell you what I go through on a day-to-day basis, people would lose their hair and not sleep a wink. In fact, you may be asking, how hard is it to run a school? Well, I don't simply run a school. I own 9 businesses. I'm a school owner, a retail owner of a store. I'm a real estate entrepreneur, a consultant, a father, etc. And I'm not saying this to make you feel like, you know, that or trying to brag, because simply, I run 5 schools. But you guys are out there doing the same thing. You might not have 5 schools, but you're retailing. You're a store owner. You're a school owner, another business. You have to pay rent, which could easily be turned into a mortgage. You're probably parents. So you're doing all these things as well. You just don't realize it. You have to understand that if you have a low threshold, then you're not going to make it in business or any business for that matter. Life is tough, and it's not going to change anytime in the near future. Right now, we have to work on threshold. How many hours are you capable of working before burning out? Whatever the number may be, you have to slowly increase that number. If you're in a relationship and your spouse and family demand more of your time than you have to sit down and reevaluate your situation. You must decide on whether you're suited for that life of a self-employed person, a business owner, or maybe possibly you should simply just go out to work for someone. Think about this. You have to find a balance. But if you want to reap the rewards, in the end, you must make some decisions. Do you have what it takes to be a success, or are you simply too busy, like my quote from before? Remember, only 5 hours per week makes an extreme difference. Those 5 hours could be the difference between success and failure. Maybe it may take getting up earlier before everyone else in your house is up and setting your day in place. Or maybe when everyone goes to sleep, you should stay up an extra hour or two a night, plotting out your day or your week's work. What is it that you're going to do to give yourself the edge? Ask yourself, what is your threshold? Here's where it may get a little philosophical, but what are your beliefs? What are your self-limiting beliefs? Do you find that your belief system holds you back? For example, Many school owners and I speak about the fact that they're charging far too little. This has been a topic of conversation for many school owners in every consulting company, but yet I find still many school owners that I talk to will tell me that it's not possible. Their clients won't pay a higher amount. They live in a depressed area. They have a military community, and blah, blah, blah. You know, for the ones who do trust in me, they have found that their belief system was crushed. It's been altered. I realize that it takes a great deal to shift someone's perspective, but you need sometimes to just step out of your comfort zone to do it. Perspective is something that I've been developing over years. You know, I found that I've based on my values that have been taught to me either by my parents, society, or a chain of events. Remember, though, they're not always true. Sometimes they can be, but most of the time they're not. I'll give you another example. Another staff member, different staff member of mine, is always stressed out. When I talk to this person, I say, how are you stressed out 90% of the time? They're either saying that, oh, wow, if you would have gotten to me yesterday, I would have exploded. But, you know, inevitably, no matter what happens, a few days a week in their life is stress-ridden. The real problem is not life, because as I said before, if you dealt with this staff member dealt with 100% of just a hundredth of what I go through on a daily basis, they'd probably jump off a bridge. I have to say many things in my life have led me to what I have as my threshold, and my martial arts have had a great deal to do with that, but also the tolerance and what I've learned of the issues that to some may seem like a catastrophe. To me, they just seem like little drips in a bucket. I want to be clear, perspective is like an illusion. Going back to that fancy dictionary again, the definition of perspective is described as the state of one's ideas, the facts known to someone or to one, in having a meaningful interrelationship. You know, for example, you have to live here for years in order to have a perspective, right? So it's just so important for us to realize that, you know, it's a belief system. For example, everyone believed the world to be flat at one point. Until that it was discovered to be round, people were afraid to go in a boat because they felt they'd just fall off the edge of the earth. Yet that belief system held strong for years until someone pushed the envelope, forced those people to believe otherwise, and presented the facts in an undeniable way. So let's talk about changing your perspective as a business owner. Here's a homework assignment, and I want you to take a pen and write this down. And if you're driving in your car, stop the car or the tape and start it when you can write this down. But what self-limiting beliefs do you have? Do you believe that if you charge too much, people will quit your school or not join? Do you believe that if you ask for too much money, people will think less of you? Do you believe that money is the root to all evil? Do you believe that you're destined to work hard your entire life and then, you know, just die? Do you believe that you deserve to be ultimately successful, rich beyond your wildest dreams? Do you feel luck is never on your side? Do you think with a limited mentality, is life a series of speed bumps or are they mountains to you? Is life a molehill or Mount Everest? I want you to take 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be now, but take 5 minutes to write down 10 self-limiting beliefs, 10 things that if you change your process or belief system would help you reach new heights. One perfect example is price increase. If you raise your prices, just let's say, raise your prices $5 a month, I'm sure that even in these economic times that unless you're at your peak, you know, now, I mean, you're charging $150, $200 a month, but if you're like in the $80, $90 range, if you raised $5, $70, $5 per month, $70 per year, do you think you would lose that many people? I don't think so. I doubt very much you would. And let's just say you did that and you had 100 students, 100 times 70, that's $7,000. That's $700 more a month, right? Or I'm sorry, $70 times $5, right? Or 100, let's do 100 students, 100, I'm on my calculator now, times 5, you're looking at $5,000, right? Now, that's just a small thing, $5,000, that's a few hundred dollars a month more in your pocket just for taking and breaking down that belief system. And you know what? If you're uncomfortable and you don't believe me that it's going to be an easy kind of thing, the next 5 people that walk through the door, show them a new price list of $5 more a month and see if they bite. slowly break through your threshold of what you believe to be your limit. Now, after you take the time to write these 10 self-limiting beliefs, you should write down how you're going to change them. What steps are you going to take to make things better? Are you going to go to a self-help seminar? Are you going to go to a Tony Robbins event? Are you going to go to the next Maya Super Show where Tony Robbins is the keynote speaker? Are you going to do my elite coaching program where you do a once-a-week 40-minute call? Of course, I had to plug it. You know that. But I definitely have found that my clients have just changed their entire paradigm of what they believe the martial art business to be. What is it that you're going to do to make a change in your life? How long are you going to take? What are you willing to do to make the changes necessary? What is it in your life that's holding you back? If you don't know, it's time to take a good look, an inventory. Are you happy where you are? Are you happy running a school? Are you happy working for someone else? Do you like to teach children? Do you hate dealing with children and parents? You know, what is it? Here's assignment number two. Let me just rehash. Number one, of course, 10 self-limiting beliefs. Write them down, your limiting beliefs. And then what you're going to do to change them. The second assignment two, and by now I hope you didn't start driving again. Of course, I'm just kidding. What are the 10 things in life that you hate? Please write them down. For example, I don't know, do you hate eating liver? Simply, you won't eat it anymore if that was the case. But in jobs, maybe every day you have to eat liver. Sometimes you have to tolerate something that you hate every day. It's chipping away at your very soul. In other words, it forces you to be miserable. If that's the case, find another job. Now, I'm not going out and saying quit your job immediately, but look for another one as you continue working. Then and only then, give your boss at least 4 weeks' notice and help them replace you. Remember, you never know when you may need to go back there, and if you do things right, you'll always be respected, right? So pick 10 things that you hate and do whatever you can to either eliminate, correct, or change them. You can pick large goals like the way the country is run, and you can make that one of your tasks, but you must be able to influence the situation. Of course, you can help change the world and make it a better place, you know, one step at a time by teaching more students and helping them become better people, but be honest with yourself and pick things within your control. Immediate things that every day makes you eat liver, so to speak. I know this may sound a bit like goal setting, and it is, but really we're trying to eliminate things that hold you back. Here's another example. I had a friend that seemed to be self-destructive. He and I spoke for many years while he was running his school, but it seemed that every time I encouraged him to do something, he would start off doing it. It seemed perfect. In fact, he would even teach it. You know, he would inevitably, though, he would stop doing what he started out to do. He would quit or forget and fall back into his old ways. I always wished the best for him and would try to pull him back on track and keep him focused, but I realized I was wasting my time in a dead end. He was not willing to look deeper and find out the true root cause of why he would self-destruct. What were the reasons that he was holding himself back? What are the reasons that you hold yourself back? Try to take some time to find that out, and try to find out why it's helped forge your belief system. Once you realize that, you can truly make a change. I'm going to give you an example. When I first owned my landscape construction company in New York, I had about a 10 to 11 month season, if I was lucky. I know when the fall hit, it was crunch time. I felt like a squirrel gathering my food for the winter because everything would be frozen and there'd be nothing to harvest. So I would work 100 hours a week paying my bills and stocking away as much money as possible so that I could get through the winter. I put a great deal of stress on myself. So in turn, year after year of this behavior, just in the sight of a leaf falling off of a tree, I would create this stressful emotion within. For years after I sold my landscape business, I'd feel this feeling. I truly never knew why, but every fall, at the sight of a leaf falling and the smell in the air of fall, the tension rose in my body. I once meditated on this, and then I realized through that meditation, some deep soul searching, that this emotion was an anchor, but it was no longer part of my mentality. I sold my landscape business. I was teaching martial arts full time, but yet when the fall would come, I was stressed out. I held on to this feeling. Once I realized that my life was totally different, I still found myself at times I would feel the stress. I just had to remind myself that it was no longer a reality, and then I would move on. But it took me a little bit of time to recognize this. Another example is when someone comes up to me, this is a personal thing, and they say to me, if you have some time later, I want to talk to you in private. I immediately go into defense mode. Maybe in my head, somewhere in my life, a girlfriend or a friend had told me that they needed to talk to me and the results were not good. I find now that when someone says it to me, I want to know immediately what they want to say. Right then and there, I can't control myself, letting thoughts run rampant, creating a huge amount of stress for me. Even though that maybe later on when I do eventually talk to this person, they just wanted to compliment me or ask me a question in private. I found that I needed to eliminate that thought process as well. And I'm still working on this one, even though it's difficult. And I have to remind myself on a regular basis that just because someone says, I'd like to talk to you later, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be something negative. For example, do you believe that a specific race of people are cheap, mean, lazy? Remember, perspective is reality. It might not be the truth. And in your reality, due to your belief system and ideals that were forged over the years of your childhood until now, remember, perception is not entirely the truth. So dig deeper and find out what is true and false. Now, as business owners, we probably have heard, and I'm sure you have, that the economy is bad out there, right? We've heard it from the president. We've heard it from everything, from the media, you know, and so on. There's no doubt that this is true. I've found there to be a crunch. I believe, too, that a lot of it has to do with what people are reading. They're afraid. They're unsure. They're uncertain. So the more we talk about it, the more it perpetuates, right? It grows. It manifests. I mean, I find that, you know, if we say to a child that people are cruel, you can't trust them for their whole lives that they're growing up, what are they going to believe as they get older? That people are cruel, that you can't trust them. If we're teaching a child that a specific race of individual is cheap or mean, as they grow up, they're going to see that person, find out if they're so-and-so, alien, and they're going to believe that they're not trustworthy, that they're mean, that they're cheap, that they're, you know, that they're whatever. So we have to look back and see what our belief systems are. The perfect example is we can't charge this month much money because we live in a military community, or we live in a, I don't know, in somewhere in the mountains, or we, you know, we have this belief system. It's not true. You have to look and see what the real reality is. I'm going to give you an example. Every time someone says to me in a school that they can't charge such and such a rate because they're in Arkansas, let's say, I ask them, does anyone drive Mercedes, Lexuses, Infinities? Do they have leather jackets on? Do they have $150 or $100 or $80 or $90 sneakers? You know, if this is the case, and of course they always say to me yes, then I say that you can charge a certain amount of prices. Of course, there's no doubt that a school or a business can price themselves out of the market. No one ever thought that people would be buying coffee. You know, and I have one right on my desk, and I'm going to take a sip right now. A 20-ounce coffee could cost $5. If you would have told that to our fathers and mothers in the 1970s, they would laugh. I remember a slice of pizza when I was younger was 25 cents. If anyone ever told me, and I didn't really understand about money back then, but if anyone ever told my parents that in 20 years or 30 years, pizza would be $2 a slice or $2.50 a slice, that gas could go up as high as $5 a gallon, it was just not in a person's belief system. So we have to understand that just because we think something to be true, it's not entirely true. Brian Tracy, who I spoke about in a few emails ago, and I did a teleseminar and talked about him, and I sat for dinner about maybe, I don't know, a month or so ago, and he had said an interesting thing to me, which I thought was amazing. He said, when people believe that they're going to make X amount of dollars in income, they will eventually go out and make it. Of course, they have to be motivated. They can't be some lazy person who says, I want to be rich. You know, it's somebody who's a business owner who says, you know, this year I'm going to make $100,000. Normally, they get to that level and they stay there. That's their threshold because they set their goals on the 100,000, or they set their goals on 100 students, or they set their goals on one upgrade a month. Brian Tracy says that the best thing you could do for yourself is find out what your income is and add a zero onto it. So if you're making 100,000, add a zero and you'll make a million. You know, our goal is to constantly push our threshold, push our belief system, and shoot for the stars. Not aimlessly, because you know what? People always say, I'd love to be rich and famous. Yet they have no plan of action. They have no talent. They have no skill. They have no goals, no means of doing it. It's just an empty wish. But if you set your sights, set your goals on paper, you set yourself up for success, and you do all the right things, adding in those 5 extra hours a week or 10 extra hours a week, eventually you're going to be destined for success. If you believe the economy is bad, that your school is going to go out of business, that you're going to decline in business, yeah, I guess you will, and there's no doubt. I had mentioned this in a conference call I did not too long ago. I'm always searching for new answers to marketing. I'm always looking for the next ad that works better. Recently, we started running television commercials. They seem to be doing really well. It took about 13 weeks before they actually started to connect, before they actually started to become visible. They were running in the background in between shows, and we really weren't getting any response. But now and then, we get a call. But now it's starting to seem that we're getting more calls on a regular basis. We're gaining that momentum, that branding. People are seeing us over and over and over again. We're starting to get on their radar. So anyway, advertising on television took a long time to build up. So I'm always searching for new ways of getting ads. What I didn't realize was that we were getting these calls and we weren't closing them as much as we can. In fact, we have so many leads that in the last 19 months, I've gathered 2,000 leads. 2,000 leads from people who either called on our commercial, called from our ad in the paper, called from our fair, called from our stadium events that we do where we get names and raffles. I mean, we have 2,000 untapped, underlined untapped, meaning not called, leads. Now, I'm caught up in the paradigm. I got to market. I got to get out there. What's my next best lead? What's my next best campaign? Where can I do this? Where can I do that? Forgetting that I have 2,000 leads sitting in my lap. 2,000 leads is worth millions. Yet I haven't called them. We've called a lot. But that wasn't our main focus. Now I'm a consultant, and I made this mistake. I can imagine how many people out there that are listening to this call or will listen to it in the future will say to themselves, how many people came in and tried a class and didn't sign up? Have I followed up on those people? Have I called them, emailed them, written them a letter? How many students have trained with you in the past that have quit for one reason or another? They haven't trained in 8 months or more, let's say. I just recently sent out about maybe 3 or 4 months ago, we sent out a letter to all those missing students, and it said, if you haven't trained in 8 months or more, we want to get you back so much that we're going to give you 50% off on our membership. When that happened, we got 10 to 15 people back. The second cycle I just sent out a few weeks ago, and we've gotten another 5 or 10 inquiries. We've only signed 2 of those people up so far, but they're coming back in. Now, these are people that were lost. Most people would have written them off. Most people would have said, hey, you know what? I guess they're not coming around. Who knows for whatever reason why those people fell off the face of the earth? Was it a money issue? Were they burnt out? Did they get caught up in a relationship? Were they depressed? Were they sick? For whatever reason, we're sitting on umpteen million leads, let's say. You know, we can call old students. We can call old trials that didn't show up. We could call trials that did show up that didn't sign up. We could call up and look for referrals from parents, from old students. Hey, who's to say that a person quit because they were too busy in life and you can't call them up and ask them if they want to buy your next book or your next DVD, or that they wouldn't want to refer someone to your school, or that they may not want to come back, but maybe they have a kid that's 3 turning 4 that wants to join your school. The question is, what are your limiting beliefs? Back to this whole topic, do you believe that once it's done, it's done? Some people ask me this question, which I find to be unique. They ask me the question that, when is enough? When do I stop calling someone? When do I stop sending them mail? When do I stop whatever? And I say, when they tell you to stop. Other than that, don't bother stopping, because you never know. Even if you mail it to their house and they moved and it says for resident only or for the current resident, Joe Smith and current resident, they could open this letter up and get a discount on your program. Remember, it doesn't cost you as much to just keep on nurturing these leads and these sales, and you're going to probably get results if you continually do it. You have to ask yourself, in the machine of marketing in your school, in the machine of referrals in your school, in the machine of 2-4-6-week calls, how thorough are you? Do you do it in bursts, like that analogy of that, or example of the flare on the roadside accident that the police put out that burns so bright for like an hour and just crumbles up into dust and goes away? What are your marketing campaigns like? Are you following up and following through on a consistent basis? Are you doing the calls that you need to do? I'll give you another example. A lot of people who join my Taking It to the Next Level program, well, not a lot, but some that join will eventually stop because they've never got a chance to go on the site. Now think about this. They're paying $69 a month or whatever the cost may be, and they don't have even opened the site up. They have all good intentions when they sign up and click their credit card or click that button to say sign up, but then they don't get around to doing it. My question is, why don't they do it? Why don't they take the time? And it's that old saying, they're too busy to be successful. So rather than going on and on about this, I want to take this time, Kathy, now, to open up for any questions, if we have any, if any are online, if not. And if not, then I'll go into my closing because I've talked for 45 minutes solid without stopping, and I hope you guys enjoyed this topic so far. So do we have any questions?
The phone lines are open. If there's anybody on the phone that would like to ask a question, feel free.
Anybody out there? Okay. How about any on the internet today?
I don't see any on the internet. They're probably busy making that two different lists of 10 items you asked for.
Well, okay, that's true, right? So, okay, no problem. I used to kind of get nervous when people didn't ask questions. And then I realized, like, if I'm doing my job properly, then hopefully that's all that they need, you know? I think that this is kind of an esoteric kind of topic, but at the same time, I think that it's important because we don't realize that when we're growing our business that sometimes we could sit around, not even realizing that we're doing it, and waste massive amounts of time. I'm going to give you an example. I read on a statistic page of the New York State unemployment, and don't quote me on these numbers because I'm just going off the top of my head, but it was saying that the average employee in an 8-hour work day works 6 hours, actually physically works 6 hours. And they attribute that to taking breaks, searching email, playing on the web, meeting in their desk space, talking to coworkers, going to the water fountain. And one big thing that they said was cigarette breaks, which was a big thing, which I thought was amazing. So think about this. If you took those 2 hours a week, and the 2 hours a day, I mean, times 5 days, that's 10 hours of wasted work a week. 10 hours, that's 40 hours a month. That's a work week in itself, 40 hours, right? Now, if we look at our own work schedule and we write, and here's another assignment that I'd like to give everybody, a homework assignment, if you're willing to do it. If not, hey, listen, remember that quote, which is important, that it says familiarity breeds contempt, right? When you're used to something, you get in the rut and you kind of just go through life. Life runs you. You don't run life, right? But anyway, think about this. In your workday, what is it that you're doing that fall into the categories of one? Well, let me give you the seven categories. Write this down. There are seven important categories, essential categories to running a martial arts school. Number one, new students. Write that down now. Number one, new students. Number two, existing students, which, of course, falls into the category of motivation, retention, exciting classes. The third category of running a martial arts school is upgrading. Some schools, I'm amazed and shocked that they have no upgrade programs. They charge $80 a month, and that's it. There's nothing else available to anybody. Four, retail. Retail is probably one of the most overlooked areas in a martial arts school. In fact, I've seen schools that actually tell their clients, here's the catalog, go, here's the website, go and buy it. They don't care that they're losing tens of thousands of dollars a year and not servicing your client and training them not to purchase from them. So four is retail. Five, special events. Systematically, a lot of my clients that I work with and the Member Solutions clients and so on, we talk about a thing called an event journal. If anyone out there is interested, I've offered this tons of times. Just email me at Renshi, R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I, Ninja, N-I-N-J-A. That's Renshi, L-I, Ninja, at AOL.com. And I'll send you my event journal pages. And basically the event journal helps you keep a diary, a journal, a document of what events you've done throughout the year. I recommend to break it up into 12 months, January through December, and write down what events you've done and blueprint out those events, what you did to make the event a success, what you did to make money, how you advertise it, how you marketed, blah, blah, blah. And then, anyway, then develop that into your special event journal, and that will be your DNA, your blueprint for next year, 2009. You shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. You should just go back to those 10 special events, those 10 seminars, or those four parent nights, and four this or four that, and you should have your blueprint for next year. In fact, I'm putting my blueprint together in a packageable product where people could just purchase that and look at it and have the entire blueprint of all 12 months of what they could do and how to do it and what to do and so on. So number five is special events. Six, of course, and I don't really recommend this, but it is part of the nature of our business, is pay in fulls and compression payments. I'm not going to really talk much about that other than warning everyone to be real careful with pay in fulls. I'm not a person who buys into the philosophy. I'd much rather see you have billing volume than cashing clients out. But one thing is this ratio, is that if you sign five people up this month, you can cash out one person next month, a 5-to-1 ratio. So that means that you'll always grow your school by five. Now listen, that means five new students. So if you have five people quit and five people join, you can't cash out anyone. You have to have an overage of five. So for example, five people quit, you sign up 10, you have a 5 overage. Now you could do a 5-to-1 ratio and cash one person out the next month so that you're constantly going to be growing your school, growing your billing volume, and growing your numbers so that every month you're bringing in money. The last and final one, number 7, is what I call upper level training. Team Leadership Character Development, which is a chargeable program where you could charge people money for it, instructor training programs, and spiritual development programs. So there are 7 components, what I call my web system, which is looks like a spider web because each one of these are connecting. And of course, you know, you have your 1 new students, 2 existing and motivational existing students, how to motivate and retain. In the number 1 category, new students, all the different things like marketing falls into place, referral programs fall into place, word of mouth, and so on. Number 2, existing students. Number 3, upgrades. Number 4, retail. 5, special events. Don't forget to ask for my event journal. 6, and I pause, pay in fulls, compression payments. And 7, upper-level training. Remember, the upper-level training is designed to build the bench strength within your school. Ultimately, the goal should be, as a business owner, to do what you want when you want. You should be out on the golf course, swimming in your swimming pool, staying home with your family, taking a vacation in the Bahamas while your business is running. Now, of course, that entails making sure you have the proper people in place. Again, this is something that is a whole other seminar in itself. So the question is, again, what are your self-limiting beliefs about all these things we talked about? And that's my question right now for everybody out there. I want you to take this time and really look into it and really work hard on taking these things and breaking them down. What are the things that you hate? Get rid of them. What are your self-limiting beliefs? What are they doing to limit your success? Work on fixing them, pushing that comfort zone, growing yourself. And finally, of course, the 3 categories, which I told you is knowledge, right? Number 1, knowledge. Number 2, do you guys remember what it was? Because I'm looking for it right now. That's time management, right? And 3, the final thing, is your threshold. Remember this as an early martial artist when you first started. You would get hit in the stomach and it would hurt like heck. And then as you trained your body and built up your abs and worked harder, that pain got less and less. You had a higher tolerance level for pain than when you first started. Now, as a business owner, you probably have a low threshold for pain or business pain or stress. What we have to do is learn how to build up that threshold. We have to work on that so that we're able to push ourselves to heights unimaginable. You know, it's like magicians like Chris Angel and people like David Blaine that they could hold their breath, you know, 3-4 minutes. They had to actually go through this training course to learn how to do it. It's not like they had these great big lungs and they could just hold their breath normally, like better than the average person, although maybe some people can, but they actually train themselves with divers and free divers and Navy SEALs to learn how to do this. What are you willing to do to grow your business threshold? And that's really about it, Kathy. I think that I pretty much had it said it all at 54 minutes on the nose. So any questions come up or no?
There's no questions, but Mark in Oregon wants to say thanks. He needed the pep talk, and he'd like you to UPS him a kick in the pants.
Well, you know, I could do that. I'm not sure how much it would be in shipping, though. That's funny. Tell him, well, I'm sure he's listening. So, Mark, the thing that you have to ask yourself, and not to go into a long-winded thing, but you just got to remember that if you're kind of needing a kick in the pants, really what you're needing is the training not to get a kick in the pants, not self-defense-wise, but train yourself so that your motivation doesn't wane. Now, of course, there in life there's always going to be ups and downs like in a heart monitor. And one of my good friends had once said, his name is Ian, and from England, he once said to me that you need those ups and downs in life to be able to recognize the highs and the lows. Because if there were no lows, you wouldn't recognize the highs. It would just be flatlined. He said, and again, he said, you have to have highs and lows. But he says, as a martial artist, what we want to try to do is decrease those spikes so that our life doesn't look like a heart monitor, so to speak, that it's not up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, that it's more like ups then downs, maybe with up high, high, very little low, up high, high, very little low, up high, high, maybe a little lower, and so on, so that we're kind of narrowing these ups and downs, narrowing the time between your motivation, taking away and eliminating the possibility that we need pep talks as much. And, of course, human nature says we do, because I need them as well. But we need to limit or train ourselves to limit these ups and downs. We want to narrow the peaks and valleys in our business. We want to narrow that we don't have 4 marketing campaigns that are big pushes in the spring, summer, fall, winter. We need to market, even if we marketed small throughout. I'll give an example. One of my clients just emailed me today and said that he's ready to do a big push on postcards. You know, what else should he do? He's going to do 5,000 postcards now. And I recommended that that person does 5,000 a week, or rather than 5,000 a week, how about just 1,000 a week? 1,000 a week, for, you know, 4,000 a month times 12 months, that's 12,000 postcards, rather than 5 here, 5 there, and so on. Continually get the name out there, just like my television commercial that I'm running from my school. By the way, you guys could check it out if you'd like on YouTube, and just type in my name, Ali Alberigo, and go to YouTube, and you could see all 5 of my television commercials. And I'd love to hear your feedback on it, and also you could rate them for me. Like I said, when I first started that campaign, it took 13 weeks for it to catch hold. Now it's visible in a person's head. So if you're marketing in these little splatterings of marketing, you're not going to get the recognition that you deserve. You're not going to get the name out there. You're not going to continually bring in a flow of new students. And I hope that makes sense. And, Kathy, that's really about it. Any last internet stuff or no?
No, that's about it for today.
Okay, I hope everyone enjoyed it. I really hope everyone enjoyed this type of motivational seminar. And I love it because, you know, I love Tony Robbins and I love guys that can take someone and inspire the desire to be better. In Japanese martial arts, we call it shibumi, the constant pursuit of perfection. Tony Robbins calls it kenai, constant and never-ending improvement. I really want you guys out there to succeed. I'm available via email. Again, Renchi, LINinja@AOL.com. Kathy and I and all of us at Member Solutions are proud that we're going to launch this elite one-on-one consulting program. There's going to be a limited amount of spots available, but it's going to be a 40-minute phone call once a week. And I personally guarantee, that if you follow the guidelines of the program and listen and learn from it, you'll definitely do like some of my personal clients do, quadruple their business in a matter of a year or 2 years. So anyway, if you're interested in that, contact Kathy or I, and I'm real excited to be here. Kathy, thanks again for the opportunity. And everybody, well, if you're hearing this at a later date, I hope you enjoy the holidays. For those of you guys now, have a great holiday, and I look forward to talking to you in the new year. Take care.